Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Much has been made of the deal in Congress over the payroll tax cut and extended jobless benefits and how it's going to be paid for. Turns out, Congress is going to get the money out of thin air. For real, not making it up. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 17th of February. Great to have you with us. The bipartisan meeting of the minds in Washington over the payroll tax cut and extended unemployment benefits became official today. There was some nose-holding by members on both sides of the aisle as they voted, but the House and Senate did approve the Social Security tax holiday that will continue through the end of the year. Millions of Americans who spend long months trying to find a job will keep getting long-term unemployment benefits, although the program will wind down as part of the deal today. The current 99-week maximum for benefits will be trimmed to 73 weeks by September. Political compromise, though, most definitely does not come cheap. $120 billion over the next 5 years is the estimate from the Congressional Budget Office. So where are they going to find the money? Well, for one thing, Congress plans to auction off parts of something called the spectrum. Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon walks us through the selling of the public airwaves.
You've got your AM radio, TV stations, citizens band, police, fire, military, air traffic control, radar, and even car door key fobs. They all use different frequencies of the radio spectrum, but it's the exploding popularity of smartphones and streaming video that have turned wireless on-ramps to the information superhighway into a frustrating crawl at times. And the Federal Communications Commission is only expecting the jam to get worse. Glenn Fleischman is a tech writer for The Economist Online.
Just like you could only fly a certain number of planes through the air at the same time, wireless spectrum works in much the same way. You have a certain amount of airspace, and you can only send a certain amount of wireless data or voice data through that space.
The FCC's answer is to clear more space in the wireless spectrum and sell it to the highest bidder. Open frequencies are in high demand from wireless providers, even as channels set aside for the nation's TV broadcasters go unused. Christian Sandvig is a media professor at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He says most of us have cable.
By some estimates, you might say about 9% of the population of the United States is watching television over the air and dropping. On the other hand, the population of people who want to use smartphones to do things like browse the web keeps increasing.
So Congress has decided to auction off slivers of the spectrum, hoping to raise around $22 billion. TV stations will be given a small share of the proceeds if they agree to give up the channels they were authorized to use for free.
Here, if you just get off this spectrum, we'll give you some money.
You could call it making money out of thin air. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
He stole my line, or I stole his. I don't know. As long as we're on the topic of the electromagnetic spectrum, consider this. 55 million iPhones were sold last year, used for phone calls and game playing and picture taking and web surfing. If you have an iPhone or an iPad or a Mac, you're probably using the Safari web browser, come standard on Apple devices. And it has the added benefit of not letting advertisers keep an eye on where you go online. At least that's how it's supposed to be. A story in the Wall Street Journal today says otherwise. Julia Angwin shared the byline on it. Julia, it's good to have you with us.
Happy to be here.
So in as layman-like terms as possible, what exactly is going on here?
I know, this is a very complicated
right?
story. So what is going on is we learned that Google and a few other ad companies were circumventing the privacy settings on Apple's Safari web browser. So the Safari web browser is what most people use on their iPhones, iPads, and some people use on their desktop computers.
Okay. Another way that I've heard this put is that they're putting cookies in there, those things that sort of track where you're going.
Yes. So basically, Safari is the only major web browser that by default blocks the installation of cookies, which are mm-hmm. these little tracking files, from sites other than the site you're visiting. So for instance, if you visit the Wall Street Journal website, you would get a cookie maybe from that website, and
right.
that might remember your settings, but it doesn't allow other advertisers usually who are on that page to place cookies on your machine.
And what Google's doing would.
Yes, Google and a few others were using a technique that tricked Safari into allowing their cookies to be placed on these users' computers.
That word you used, tricking Safari into letting cookies be implanted, it implies nefariousness.
Right. And okay, Google would say it was not nefarious, but yeah. I will just explain the trick in the
sure.
clearest way I can possibly describe it.
In the aforementioned layman's terms, yeah.
Yes. So Safari, in general, is designed to prevent these advertisers from placing cookies on the user's computer. But it does have an exception. It believes that if you, the user, click in an ad and fill out a form, for instance, mm-hmm. you want a cookie from them. You clearly are interacting with that right. advertisement in some way. So what Google and these others were doing was actually embedding invisible forms into their ads, which were then automatically submitted without the user doing anything back to Google, which allowed Safari to think that you, the user, had done something with that ad. You might not have looked at it, you might not have clicked on it, but in fact, the browser thought you had and allowed the cookie to be placed.
Why would Google do this? What's the upside for them?
So here's what Google says about why they did this. They were trying to embed a little button in their ads called plus one. So the idea was that if you looked at an ad and liked it, you could click this plus one button. And in order to tell if you were logged into their Google Plus system, mm-hmm. they wanted to drop this cookie to check your logged in status.
Mm-hmm.
But the end result was that they ended up circumventing a lot of people's privacy settings.
Right. Much has been made the past, I don't know, 2-3 weeks about Google's privacy policies. They're revamping them, and the company says they're streamlining them. I mean, they've had privacy issues in the past. This does not seem to be a positive development in the world of Google privacy.
Right. Not only have they just done this privacy policy revamp, which I think raised a lot of scruples, but also the Google signed a consent decree, a 20-year privacy consent right. decree with the Federal Trade Commission in October, in which they promised not to ever misrepresent their privacy practices to consumers.
Hmm. Frame this for me, would you, in the larger you have no privacy, get over it debate?
What I think it means is that every time we see one of these slip-ups, the companies involved talk about bugs or they talk about a loophole or whatever.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is what we're really coming to see after months and years of these I'm sorry, it was a mistake issues is that surveillance has become so much a part of every part of our lives, it's almost impossible to turn off. There are no rules. And I think there's just a growing sense of uneasiness about what is going to happen to all this information about every website I've ever visited.
Right. Julia Angwin at The Wall Street Journal. Julia, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Investors in the more ubiquitous than anybody ever thought search engine company sold off today. Shares of Google down 0.3%, a measly $604 apiece. Otherwise, a split decision for the major indices. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, there's the budget, there's a payroll tax cut deal, there's the stock market, there's all kinds of things to talk about in the next 4 minutes of live radio. Here for our weekly wrap of Wall Street and beyond are Sudeep Reddy from The Wall Street Journal. He's down in Washington, and John Carney from CNBC in our cozy little studios in New York City. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Carney,
hey.
You there? All right.
I am here.
You got to answer the phone, man, when we call. All right. So Sudeep, we're going to go to you, actually, first. And I will say that I am pleasantly surprised by the bipartisanship that has broken out over this payroll tax cut deal.
Yeah, everything seems like it's working finally. Everything seems like it's great.
Oh, look, democracy.
Except all we've really done is put off these decisions. We've put them off for 9 months until after the election. Income taxes, payroll taxes, the debt ceiling, all of it's going to come up. And if you really believe that policy uncertainty has been a factor in holding back this incredibly weak recovery that we've had over the last 3 years, then you have to be worried about all the policy uncertainty that we've put in that doesn't trigger for 9 months.
Okay, you're killing my buzz early in the segment because my next question to Carney was going to be, look, John, the stock market's great. People are feeling better. Are we now out of bad times?
Right now, it looks like the economy is doing much better.
Yeah.
Politicians seem to be able to get along with each other. This doesn't mean that there's no dangers in the world, but if those things don't erupt in a bad way, I think actually we stand a chance of doing pretty well.
All right. So this would be then, by my calculation, the third spring in a row in which things have been looking up, and we have been bitten in the tuchus every single time. So, Sudeep, what don't we know that's going to get us, I guess, is my question.
Well, we know a lot that could get us, which is what's more worrisome. And there's this sense of exuberance right now building up in the stock market that everything is going to be fine. And it's just taking a lot of leaps of faith that Europe won't explode, that Iran will ease and oil prices will ease, that the housing mess clear itself up.
Crude was $103 in New York today, a barrel. I mean, come on.
Exactly. And so if any of these problems worsen, then you can see this reversal just like we've seen in each of the past 2 years.
So, John Carney, what do you like for the thing that's going to come up and tap us on the shoulder and say boo?
Well, I used to say Europe, but I've been talking with a lot of high-level people on Wall Street and inside the inside our government, and they seem most concerned to me by Iran. They think that's the thing that could pose the most danger. Oil spiking up to $200 a gallon. $200 a barrel would be extraordinarily, bad for our economy. And it could, having to be in any sort of armed conflict again, just the potentiality of that is very bad. And so that's what people seem to be most worried about.
Sudeep, what's the vibe down there? I mean, I sort of cut you off before when we were talking about things that could go bad. What do people down there in Washington like or not like, I guess is the question.
People do seem to be relatively more calm about Europe. Whether that's justified or not is another issue. But the fact that we've got oil prices so high already and we haven't even hit the spring and summer when they usually go up is a big problem. And that's what weakened us in 2008 in an election year before the financial crisis. And that's a big concern now because it's just so easy for oil prices to affect everything else across the economy, whether it's for businesses or for regular consumers, and pull us down pretty quickly.
Right.
Oil prices are already starting to, if you look at how much oil has gone up, it's already taken out any of the stimulus
that's been provided. Great point.
But through the payroll tax cuts. So right now we're just treading water through these, stimulus tax cuts. And if it goes up much further, we're back in a place where the economy will have to contract because so much of our spending money has to go to oil.
So, John, Sudeep mentioned this very scary word, exuberance, in the stock market, and whether it's rational or irrational. A lot of people look at the Dow and they say, come on, the Dow's almost at 13,000. How bad can the economy be? Help me disabuse them of that notion.
Well, one thing to remember is that we've seen it before that the Dow, the S&P can diverge greatly from what actually happens in the economy because people can get irrationally exuberant.
Right.
Right now, we have a lot of people in the markets who are saying, oh, we can go up to 1,500. And I think that they're not insane to say that.
15,000 on the Dow?
15,000 on the Dow.
Get out of here. That's absurd.
It's totally possible if nothing goes wrong.
All right.
Meaning, if all of our big fears don't come about,
yes.
If oil starts, flowing out of the ground for much cheaper, then we everything could go well. But again, that's ignoring all the big risks out there.
Yeah. So, let's end on an upbeat and just say we're keeping our fingers crossed. John Carney from CNBC and Sudeep Reddy from The Wall Street Journal down in Washington. Thanks, you guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you.
Sir. All right. See you. We've done a couple of stories the past few weeks about veterans working their way back into the civilian labor force, about the difficulties they're having, about GE the other day saying it wants to hire 5,000 vets, and unfortunately, what turned out to be a lie from a man who claimed he'd been an Army sniper in Iraq. Commentator Scott Lyon was in Iraq with 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. We checked.
I was discharged from the Marines in 2005 after a combat tour in Iraq. Since then, I've read numerous accounts of men and women exaggerating or completely inventing stories of their military service. In many cases, these stories were reported as true. To veterans, falsehoods of this sort can seem obvious because fakers often don't talk or act like us. They will give unprompted accounts of how many people they killed, prestigious medals they received, or secret missions they took part in. They invariably claim to have been a SEAL, a sniper, a ranger, or a member of some other elite force. They frequently punctuate their tales with references to deep-seated personal problems supposedly caused by military service. It's a hero-victim narrative that many people seem all too happy to embrace. The imposters are looking for sympathy, for accolades, and sometimes for money or charity. At a time when thousands of soldiers are making the transition from war to civilian life, fakers have been known to siphon off services that could have gone to actual veterans. When caught, the imposters often claim they only meant to honor the troops. They gloss over the fact that they are always the primary beneficiaries of their stories. Many returning service personnel I know don't have a problem sharing their stories, but their accounts rarely revolve around them. Instead, they typically recount the heroism and sacrifices of those they served alongside in battle. To hear people who have never borne this sacrifice attempt to claim it for their own is more than just insulting. It is damaging to real veterans everywhere. It reinforces stereotypes based in fiction. In a country where less than 1% of the population serves in the military, it creates a false impression that the veteran community cannot easily undo. Those who served deserve to have that service reflected accurately.
Scott Lyon's a law student now. He's at the University of Iowa. We check that too. Coming up, satire as a coping mechanism.
We always find someone else to blame, and we wanted at last to do a show and say, it's your fault, you Greek.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials added 45 points on this Friday. That's a 3%, but it still wasn't enough to top the 13,000 mark. They got close. Blue chips closed at 12,949. The NASDAQ went the other direction, retreated 8 points, 0.25%, ended at 2951. The S&P 500 notched up 3 points, about 0.25%. The wrap-up number there was 1361. So stocks overall bounced back from the previous week's decline. Since Monday, the Dow rose 1.2%. The NASDAQ advanced 1.7%. The S&P 500 gained 1.4% for the week. A couple of food icons delivered earnings that satiated analysts and investors. H.J. Heinz shares poured on 4.5% today. Stock in Campbell Soup simmered up more than 2.5%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. On February 20th, 1792, President George Washington signed an act creating the U.S. Post Office. That office will be closed on Monday in observance of Washington's birthday. In other birthday news, super gorgeous supermodel Cindy Crawford turns 46, and the United Nations marks World Day for Social Justice. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
We start letters today with John and Maggie Anderson. I talked to them Tuesday about the year they spent looking for and shopping only at black-owned businesses. A search that Maggie said they did some of by phone. She told me that. I said this. This is the thing that's going to get us emails calling me a horrible person, but you don't sound black over the phone, right? Which is where I got into trouble. Randon Hall from Nashville, Tennessee, sums up some of the kinder letters that we got.
The couple sounds like the black people I know, and they certainly sound like the black president that we have in this country. So I'm just not sure what black sounds like.
Got a whole lot of not-so-kind letters on that one as well. A couple of days ago, David Woolman came on the program to talk about money and how he wants to get rid of it, cash specifically, the coins and the paper stuff, at least in part because it's dirty, as in actually filthy. Had a lot of comments about the idea of doing away with cash and about how it's easier to do without it if you have a lot of money to begin with. Mick Archer works at a piano bar in Chicago.
When we count up our tips at the end of the night, we've got Purell and rubbing alcohol and everything. We know that money is filthy, but there's no other way to get tips. It's between 20 and 50% of our income, so no cash. You would wipe out the piano bar industry.
Finally, the virtues of living alone, as expressed on the broadcast this week by Eric Kleinenberg. One of Eric's points was that those dwelling solo can be good for the economy. R.J. House lives, and I might add lives alone, in Venice, California. For him, it's more basic.
I never have to pick up after someone else, and both the dishes and laundry can pile up for as long as I can stand it. The best part? Total control of the remote control.
Got a favorite piece of technology? Write to us. You know the drill. Marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. All right, so look at this. We made it down to the bottom of the show before we mentioned Greece. How about that? It is, though, going to be a tough weekend in Athens, another tough weekend, more properly, because their latest deadline, after missing dozens of them, is Monday. That's when other Eurozone countries are scheduled to decide whether Greece has done enough to qualify for a second bailout package. Whichever way that vote goes, good times are probably still a ways away in Greece. There may be more street protests. But Greeks of a less violent disposition have been expressing their fury and frustration in more artistic ways. From Athens, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Laden with debt, plunging into poverty, humiliated by the rest of Europe, the Greeks have co-produced an opera about the debt crisis. It's a comedy. The triumphal march from Aida, not with trumpets, but with kazoos. Like Verdi's original, this modern adaptation is about conquerors and slaves. But here the conqueror is not an Egyptian pharaoh. He's the German head of the European Central Bank, and he comes to Athens to sort out the debt problem. Haralampos Hoyos is with the production.
There's been a lot of talk about a new kind of German occupation of Greece. It reflects a truth that Greek people really feel that they are not masters of their destiny and of their life.
The comic opera is a joint production between German and Greek opera companies. So far, it's played only in Germany, to packed, enthusiastic houses.
The German people were not only laughing, but also cheering and applauding and banging their feet. And everybody, after the show, was coming to us and trying to speak in Greek, and I think it changed something.
The opera comes to Greece next month. We'll see then whether the Greeks find it as hilarious as the Germans. Certainly the Greeks have, in the past, seen the funny side of the crisis. This satirical stage show was a big hit in Athens last year.
Ελλάδα 2011. Μια χώρα σε αποσύνθεση. Υψηλό δημόσιο χρέος. Ανεργία.
The show, called The Foundation, lampooned the Germans for throwing their weight around in Greece. But it also ridiculed the Greeks for their alleged lack of foresight and discipline. Yanis Sarakatsanis is one of the cast.
Because we realized that we always found someone else to blame, and we wanted at last to do a show and go to the audience and say, it's your fault, you Greek.
Έλληνες προσοχή. Ανάμεσά σας κυκλοφορούν κι άλλοι Έλληνες.
He says, Greeks, beware. In your midst there are more Greeks. But while the show wowed audiences in Athens last year, this year it bombed. As unemployment has soared above 21%, as the spending cuts have bitten more deeply and the tax hikes have begun to hurt, Greeks have unsurprisingly lost their appetite for satire, says Yanis.
Political satire looks... it's like making fun about someone who's dead.
It's not funny anymore.
Exactly, it's not funny. It is a problem now, and people are afraid.
Μαύρος ουρανός, μαύρος σκοτεινός.
This gloomy song called Cazzarola seems more in tune now with the national mood. Among the lyrics, there are lines like poverty and dead end, planet Earth is bleeding, there's sadness and bitterness at the ports. This is a country that feels on the brink. Whatever new bailout conditions are agreed, concern is rising that Greece won't be able to deliver them. And that socially the country cannot cope with any more economic pain. In Athens, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note, late of a Friday, a chance to take a break from the big news of the week and catch up with what didn't quite make the headlines. It comes to us the same way it always does, courtesy of Rico Galliano, Brendan Francis Noonan, and the rest of the Marketplace staff.
Stacey Vanek-Smith, senior reporter at Marketplace. What's your story?
Happy Girl Scout cookie season.
Already? Really?
I know.
Wow, I didn't get you anything.
The gift is self-evident, luckily, on this holiday. Tagalongs, by the way. So, and there's something special this year about the Girl Scout cookie buying experience. The Girl Scouts are now taking credit cards. Some Girl Scouts will have swipers and you can pay for them with plastic.
Wow. So is this in conjunction with their new identity theft merit badge?
Ethan Lindsay, producer of the Marketplace Morning Report, what story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
The new car smell. That mythical odor.
Yeah, the perfume of the middle class.
That's right. Well, the Ecology Center, it's a nonprofit group, came out and says that new car smell, it can kill you.
It can kill you?
It's toxic. They're spraying bromine, chromium, and lead. That's what smells so nice.
See, this explains why I'm so incredibly healthy.
See, I have no problem getting into your car, Rico.
No, the rusting 2000 Corolla is completely... No one's going to be made sick except to look at it.
David Gura, Washington reporter for Marketplace. What story are you going to be talking about?
This comes out of a magazine called International Living.
Ah.
I gotta admit, I'm not a subscriber to International
it's
Living.
It's kind of a broad topic.
Exactly. They have a message for retirees. Forget Florida. Ecuador, that's where it's at.
Really?
They're calling it the world's top retirement haven.
Uh-huh.
The magazine's holding a contest, and the winner gets to spend a month in the Ecuador Highlands, all expenses paid. All you got to do is tell the magazine why you want to spend your retirement in Ecuador.
And so you have to be of retirement age, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I think that this this may be the most challenging part. You got to tell them that in a 3-minute video, which you got to upload to YouTube, so good luck.
So maybe if you have an ambitious grandchild who wants you to leave the country...
Get out of town, Grandma.
The radio show that Brendan and Rico do is called The Dinner Party. You can get it to go if you like. Get it to go, Dinner Party. There's a link to their podcast on our website. It's marketplace.org. The name of this radio show is Marketplace. It's from 8 p.m. Today, the Dow picked up 45 points. That's a 3%. The NASDAQ gave back 8 points, 0.25%. The S&P 500 added 3. That's 0.25%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace's acting producer is Megan Larson. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. J.J. Yor is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, the not small investment to get a pampered canine into the Westminster Dog Show.
We won the lottery. Yes. And we make no money off of it. We actually are spending money to win this lottery.
Marketplace money goes to the dogs. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend. This is APM. That's American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like...
What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.